You want the best for your child. K-12 can help them gain the skills they need to reach their full potential while giving you the support you need to get them there. K-12-powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Their state-certified teachers make online learning interactive and engaging, allowing your child to learn at their pace from the safety of home. Join the more than 3 million families who have chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast today to learn more. That's k12.com/podcast.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Tontandia products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies both on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed's sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Tontandia products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies both on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Hey, guess what? The 2025 Writing Excuses Cruise is over 50% sold out. During this week-long masterclass, I'm going to be leading writers like yourself through a series of workshops designed to give you the tools to take your writing to the next level. Space is limited, but there is still time to secure your spot. We're going to be sailing out of Los Angeles from September 18th through 26th. Regardless of where you are in your writing journey, this event is your opportunity to learn new skills while exploring the beautiful Mexican Riviera. Whether you're revising a story, reworking a character arc, or revitalizing your plot, you'll leave more confident in your current story and bolstered by a new set of friends. Join us on board at writingexcuses.com/retreats.
This episode of Writing Excuses has been brought to you by our listeners, patrons, and friends. If you would like to learn how to support this podcast, visit www.patreon.com/writingexcuses. Season 20, Episode 17.
This is Writing Excuses.
An interview with Christopher Schwartz.
I'm Dong Lan.
I'm Howard.
And today we are very lucky to have a special guest with us. We have Christopher Schwartz. Would you like to introduce yourself for us?
Yeah, I'm Chris. I am a furniture maker and writer and publisher, and I cleaned the toilets at Lost Art Press.
Multi-talented for sure. I'm very excited to have you.
I feel you because I'm the toilet cleaner here at our house.
I'm the corporate toilet cleaner, so yeah.
Sometimes that's what it takes when you're in that publisher role, you know? Anyways, I'm very excited to have Christopher on with us today. As I've talked about on the show at various points, I'm an amateur woodworker. And one of the ways I think about what we talk about here in terms of the craft of writing is sort of filtered through that craft as well. And so when I first started getting into woodworking as a hobby, one of the first books I read was, or actually I think the first book I read, was the Anarchist's Toolbox by Christopher. And then I just sort of learned more about what you do as a writer and as a publisher and as somebody who obviously builds incredible furniture. And when we started doing this more of an interview series, looking at the craft of writing through the lens of other things that we do in our lives, I just thought you would be a really perfect guest to have on the show. So I couldn't be more excited to have you here.
Oh, well, thanks for having me, Dong.
Yeah, so just to get into it, as we were chatting before, you know, you obviously make furniture that has been a lifelong practice for you, but also one of your early entrances sort of to this industry was as a writer. So how do you think about that divide between what you do as a craftsman and as a writer?
I started as a newspaper journalist. That was my training. And so I was, you know, the dead body of the week reporter in newspapers. No, I miss the smell of a good trailer fire. But, you know, I eventually sort of the need to build furniture kind of took over, which came from, you know, my background with my family as hippies in Arkansas. And So I tried to find a way to meld those two things. So I could write because that was something that I could do to make a little bit of money. And then I could build furniture, which was also something to make another little bit of money. And so combining two really low paying professions, that's sort of how it happened. And I got a job with a magazine, woodworking magazine called Popular Woodworking, was there for 15 years, and then decided that corporate publishing was really messed up and started my own publishing company, which I've run for 18 years now.
Was starting the publishing company something that you did immediately after leaving, or was there a time where you were trying to figure out once you decided to no longer be at Popular Woodworking?
I'm not brave enough to just jump off the cliff. Mm-hmm. So I had started the publishing company in 2007 and then kind of, you know, figured out how to do things there, and I quit in 2011. So it was about 4 years where I was doing both, which I think is the best way to quit your job.
Yeah, that for sure.
That is a nice window. I was a corporate software middle manager from 2000 to 2004, and I had started cartooning in 2000, and it was 2004. When we went ahead and took the plunge, you don't just decide on a new career and throw the switch when you're working for yourself. It takes a lot of courage. I like the jump off the cliff aspect of it because, yeah, that's what it feels like.
It does. And if you have something going, even if it's little, that gave me a lot more courage to make the step. So I encourage people to keep their day job when they want to become a full-time whatever for themselves. You know, keep your day job for a while, as long as you can, until it just absolutely destroys your soul, and then leave.
Mm-hmm. One of the aspects, you mentioned journalism, and one of the aspects of writing for newspapers that I think fiction writers need to wrap their head around pretty quickly is the idea that in a newspaper, you're not allowed to write your way into the thesis. Mm-hmm. You have to say what you are going to say up front and then start supporting it. Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of times when I look at the prose I've written and I realize, oh, oh, the paragraph is upside down. Mm-hmm. Whole chapter is upside down. Yeah. I just got to reverse the order of things. And it's not that I want it to sound like newspaper writing. It's that I've forgotten that certain things you just need. You need to say something big and clear and important up front so that people will follow you for the rest of the page.
Yeah, you need to say it and then you need to support it. You know, you need to have the underpinnings to it too. And that's what makes for good writing, even if it's not written upside down or right side up. You know, it can all be quite hidden too if you're good at it. But yeah, that's the underpinning of, I think, a lot of really good writing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, just getting that message across as clearly as you can. When it came to, you know, leaving and starting the press, what were your goals in starting an independent publisher? And what was the thought behind that? You know, I mean, I'm someone who comes from 20 years of working in corporate traditional publishing. And so, you know, I have some guesses as to what those frustrations were and some guesses to what your goals were. But I'd love to hear from you sort of like, what did that look like for you and what went into that decision to, you know, sort of really build your own path there?
Well, I knew that corporate publishing was not what I wanted to do because that's what I had been doing at F&W Media. And pretty much what I did for the first 10 years of Lost Art Press was do everything that was the opposite of what corporate publishing did. You know, everything we do, we make everything in the United States. The books we make are beyond library grade as far as like how they're made, as far as having, we don't do perfect bindings. We do Smythe Zone, we do case bound, we do hardbacks. We try to make books that look like they're about 100 years old and that will last forever. And that's really expensive and hard to do. It's not that expensive. Like, it's surprisingly, you know, only a few dollars more, which is a lot in corporate America, but not a lot in real terms.
There's a reason why you don't see that in the, quote, mass market, unquote.
Yeah.
Well, it's just a few pennies. It's not easy because the factories aren't there. I mean, it's hard to do that in the United States because we don't have we've lost a lot of that. You know, most of the good publishing is in Korea or in China or in Italy. But we've managed to do it well. And it was also that I saw that authors were getting screwed. I was an author and I was getting screwed. And I was also a publisher and screwing other authors. So I was like this human millipede or whatever. And and so, yeah, we decided to like give, you know, pretty much double or triple the royalties that we give to authors and to make it worthwhile for them to spend 2 or 3 years on a book. Mm-hmm. So that we wouldn't get rich. I mean, that's why I still build furniture, is because I still have to do that to make ends meet, even though we ship out 60,000 books a year. That's just the way we're structured, so that the author gets a really good cut. And we get really good books as a result, just books that, you know, our first book is still in print from 18 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I own several of your books. I have the Anarchist Workbench sitting right here in front of me. And it's always been remarkable to me how beautiful the editions are and the amount of care that you guys put into making what you make. So it's really nice to hear what that process is like from your end. You know, I can sort of see a connection in between you as a furniture maker and you as a bookmaker, as a publisher. How do you think about making objects in that way? I mean, how do you think about the intersection between those two things, whether you're building a chair or making a book?
It has to last 200 years. That's really the baseline for me. And I don't know how many perfect bound books that I've owned and just been so disappointed in that they fall apart after the first or second reading. So when we design a physical book, we're going to use everything in our power to make sure that the book can survive floods, babies, dogs, you know, locusts, whatever you can throw at it. But also that the writing itself is worth having around for 200 years. That these are things that haven't been said in the craft, things that have been hidden. That's a big thing in our craft, is that a lot of stuff has been squirreled away, or most of the knowledge of woodworking is in the graveyard. And so our job has been trying to tease that out through a variety of archaeological research and, other kind of methods. So we're trying to find stuff that's worthwhile to carry the craft forward and then putting it into a time capsule, which is a book that will make the journey.
Yeah. And, you know, I think it's something that it's easy to forget. And, you know, one thing I've realized over my years in publishing is that we're in a physical goods business in a lot of ways, right? Like the physical book as an object is still the absolute core of what our industry does. You know, ebooks and audio are very important as well. But at the end of the day, what we're mostly doing is making and distributing books to you know, thousands of bookstores around the country. And so it's really nice to hear that you're putting that front and center and thinking about the book as an object first and sort of leading.
Michael Stackpole once said, and Chris, I'm pretty sure this will offend you on two counts, said that writers publishing is the business of shipping blocks of wood all over the country.
Yeah, he's not wrong.
He's not wrong, yeah.
No, he's not wrong. Yeah, it's a different form of wood for sure. Yeah. But physical media is hugely important to me. And I mean, I love digital, this, that, and the other. Yeah. I'm not discounting it. It's so portable and allows so many other things. But I think that like albums and like cassettes, my kids are into cassettes. What is wrong with them?
they're bad.
You know, yeah, what? Are you going to get into 8-tracks yet? You know, physical media is going to have its day, I think, fully, because you can't take it away from us. You know, my phone all the time is losing this song or that song or something from years ago. And it's like, no, I want to carry this around. It's an object that I revere. I have, you know, Susanna Clarke's first novel that I, you know, just carry around with me like a you know, I don't know, a love letter. So that's important.
That's really wonderful. I mean, speaking of Susanna Clarke, you as a reader, like what kind of things do you like to read and engage with on your own time? I mean, we were talking a little bit about before this that you see a connection between science fiction and the work that you do. And I'm kind of curious to hear more about that.
Yeah, I'm a science fiction nerd to the core, and I don't get to read it as much now because when you're a publisher, well, I spend all day reading. So sometimes the last thing I want to do at the end of the day is pick up a book, which sucks.
I feel that. I don't know when the last time I read a book for pleasure was.
Oh, it's so hard because when I was a kid, I mean, I read The Library's Limit every week, and that was me. So, you know, my pleasure is few and far between. I mean, Susanna Clarke, that book, you know, Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell. I don't know how many times I've read that book and some of the follow-ups, the little small novella she did. I mean, I'm reading, like we were saying, I read the Wool series. I pick my battles because I only have so much time because I read mostly stuff on JSTOR, you know, archaeological stuff about 18th century apprenticeships and stuff like that. But you were trying to, you know, we were talking a little bit about the intersection between science fiction and what I do. And what I feel like I do is that I feel like I am kind of living in a post-apocalyptic society right now, like all of us right here, as far as woodworking goes. And, you know, 100 years ago, 120 years ago, the level of knowledge about how things were made out of wood is that everything in the world was made out of wood. It was this advanced civilization that existed before us. Literally everything. You know, everybody knew how to sharpen tools. Our baskets were made of wood. Everything around us was made out of woods, little pieces of metal and some stone. And almost all of the good knowledge about that was lost. I mean, there's a, you know, because of the guild system in the 18th century, you know, we look at these pieces of furniture from the 18th century and the 17th century, and we're standing here and we don't know how they're made. We can't understand how they did them. Like what tool, we don't understand the tools they use. They don't understand the methods. We don't understand how quickly they did them. Is that we today are this retrograde society, this kind of, you know, these kind of cave creatures. And we yet, get to go back. Yeah, oh, go ahead.
And yet we feel so incredibly advanced because we can make things digital.
Yeah.
And on that note, we're going to take a quick break
while
our engineer checks to see if we have a digital problem.
Your child has so much potential, but your local schools may not be right for them. Check out K-12. K-12 powered schools are accredited tuition-free online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade.
This is not your typical homeschooling. With state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online, your child will learn at their speed, at home, with innovative, engaging technology. Join the more than 3 million families who have chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast today to learn more. That's k12.com/podcast.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Tontandia products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
So, hey, the thing of the week. I'm reading a book right now called The Bookmakers by Adam Smith, which is Basic Books, came out in 2024. And if you like books, if you're interested in the physical book, this is like a mind-blowing book. It's like 18 little nonfiction vignettes of the history of bookmaking. And if you thought you knew who Benjamin Franklin was or who William Morris was or how paper was made, it's just going to blow your mind about what books were before, and they're not like they've changed so much to what we have today. So it's just a delightful little read about how we don't know anything.
That sounds incredible, and sounds like essential reading for me in particular.
It's awesome. I mean, I hate Ben Franklin now, but that's okay.
Pretty much everybody should go into the reading of a book with the idea that they don't know anything.
Yeah.
I love learning new things. Yeah. On the woodworking front, I just need to share this anecdote real quick. We decided to do some finish-it-yourself cabinetry. No, we can't build cabinets. We do not have that skill set. But we figured we could learn how to sand and varnish. And we just could not get what felt like a furniture-grade finish on what we were doing. And so I did a little reading and realized there's a stage of sanding after you varnish.
Yeah.
You sand and you buff the, who knew? And we started doing that. And now the cabinets that Sandra has to get all the credit because she's done all the work. All I did was find the information and say, hey, guess what? I found a step that we didn't think existed. And I guess circling back, it's just so cool to learn something that flies in the face of everything you thought you knew. And then you try it and you realize, oh, I was so wrong. And now I can do a thing.
I was just saying, my little exposure to it, find that finishing can be an infinitely deep rabbit hole. And, you know, this kind of connects to what you were saying, Christopher, about, you know, so much of what you do is archaeology, right? So much of what you do is going back and trying to understand how they did it in ways that we've lost for a variety of different reasons. And, you know, that puts you in this post-apocalyptic mindset, right?
Yeah.
So you know, it's really cool to sort of hear how those things connect. What does that process look like for you when you're doing that archaeology, when you're trying to get back to understanding not only what did they do before, but how to explicate that to a modern reader?
Yeah, this is, so a good example is the first workbenches that we know about were drawn on frescoes in Pompeii. And they look totally different than the workbenches we use now. They're really low and squat and simple. And, you know, I'm thinking, how do these things work? There's no manual. Nobody's ever written down how the Romans used these workbenches, but they built furniture that is just like ours, frame and panel, you know, just really high-end stuff. So after a lot of research, I found there was this old Roman fort in Germany on the Limes that still had three original Roman workbenches that they had dug up from a well. And so I got to go there and had a whole period rush where I got to hold this workbench, pick it up and measure it and examine it very closely. Then I came back to Kentucky and I built the thing, and just like the Romans had it. And then I tried building furniture with it. And then I invited all my friends over who are furniture makers. And I was like, how would you build a cabinet on this? And we kind of worked it out. So it's a lot of experimental archaeology. And it's not just like, oh, you know, what, it's not random. It's stuff that we, you know, we have a long history of doing this stuff. But, you know, how do you adapt it to this really foreign way and try to get in their shoes, you know, use their tools and produce that work? And it's really just kind of, you get this period rush. You don't feel like a Roman or anything, but you're just like, this deep connection to somebody 2,000 years ago that knew more than you, a lot more than you.
Yeah, I think I run into fiction in fiction all the time that really frustrates me is when people kind of don't think about the material design of the world that they live in, right? When you introduce an object into your fictional world, there's all these implications that descend from it about how people exist in that world, right? If you have a workbench like this, then you're going to operate in a different way. You know, I mean, I remember the first time I saw a video of a Japanese woodworker working on a workbench, which are like very low to the floor. They're usually operating barefoot in those studios and using their feet to hold the workpiece and things like that. And it really just had all these different implications about how Japanese society operates, the physical environments they're in, you know, what they value and all of that. And so, you know, I love that you're sort of doing that process in reverse, right? You're taking the object and rebuilding the lived experience of those people around it. And I think that is so applicable to thinking about fiction and thinking about world building and the kind of work that we do on our end.
Yeah. I mean, starting with an object that you don't know how it was created, you know, it's like finding a laser gun, you know, in a desert and you're like, where did this come from? And that's really what I do. And that's what gets me up in the morning is like just thinking about these weird things and how to explain them to people and then make it applicable because, you know, like who cares that the Romans had a workbench this way, but this workbench actually turns out to be something that's great for apartment woodworkers. You know, if you want to start making furniture and you don't have a shop, this little bench looks like a coffee table. And so you can do it in your apartment. You can do it if you are in a wheelchair. You can do it if you're disabled. This workbench opens up the craft for a huge swath of people that were restricted to this mindset of, I need a garage with a table saw and a planer and all this other crap. And so that's the value that you get from going back and doing this archaeology is you build a bigger world today.
The value is actually, it's actually bigger than that. There was a, I can't remember the documentary, but I've seen a documentary and read a couple of articles about it. Roman concrete.
Roman concrete.
They did some stuff with their concrete that made the concrete heal when it cracked
with seawater.
Yep. And I don't remember the details of it, but the modern engineers who were looking at it were saying, okay, we need to figure out how to apply this because it will make our concrete better. It will make our buildings sturdier. This is a secret that's been lost to us for 2,000 years and we need to employ it now.
Yeah. And that science fiction, you know, is undiscovered worlds. And it's just writing about this undiscovered world that is just all around us.
And technology is not linear, right? There's things that we understood that get lost over time, and we have to reinvent or rediscover them. And I think, you know, we have this idea of history as progressive and it just keeps marching forward. And, you know, I think there's a lot more ups and downs and cycles to it.
Absolutely.
One thing I've always really loved about your writing, Christopher, is that you really managed to put your point of view into the books that you're writing, right? It's never just ABC, here's how to do the steps of the thing that you're making. I always can feel your worldview and perspective coming through that. How do you think about that design process, the writing process, and how you as a creator tie into those things?
Well, how to has got to be as dry as a popcorn fart as a you know, a way of writing. And it's just, you know, slot A, tab B, blah, 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 like an IKEA instruction manual. And so when I came to it, I was like, I want to look at it with how to through a different lens. You know, I know you guys are talking about lenses this season. And so, you know, the lens that I look through how to in this case, it could be science fiction in one case. In that case, it's social commentary. So how do you critique modern society through a how-to book? And I do that all the time. You know, the Anarchist Tool Chest is about consumption and about how we consume too much. And so if you build this chest and you fill it with good tools, and if you don't have room for another tool, that should tell you something, that you don't need anything more. So it's a way of, you know, making a critique without but also giving them something that they really need, which is what tool should I buy?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's what made a book that I thought was just going to be about how do I build a toolbox kind of life-changing for me in a lot of ways. It reframed how to think about this craft and this hobby I was getting into, and really gave me a lot of perspective on that. So thank you for that. And I love hearing sort of like how you're approaching that in terms of how to make a how-to more engaging, right? And also, so there's like the practical component, but then there's also you as a writer are explicating your worldview and engaging with the world around you.
Yeah, there's a lot of ways to do that. I mean, you can take how-to and look at it through a variety of lenses, and it's all fun. I mean, it's mm-hmm. it's a fun way to and that's sort of the homework I'm going to be talking about.
Mm-hmm. And I love in hearing you talk, I mean, you're talking about approaching writing from a journalistic perspective, from this how-to perspective, from the research and archaeology perspective. Is there a key to sort of combining those different aspects into your work, or do you see it all as the same practice, or are these different lenses that you're bringing to how to think about your writing and how to think about the publishing work you do?
Well, I'm a journalist, and so that's the lens that I look at the world through, is like, how can I present what I think is true? What I think is true. I know there's always, you know, subjectivity, but it is like trying to shine light on things. So that's always the most important thing to me. But I also just think it's important as a writer to take on other perspectives. Even though I don't write fiction, I try to slip into other perspectives. Like I try to write, something like a recall letter, you know, like for your car, and but do it in woodworking terms. Like if somebody was your something is getting recalled, how will I write like a corporate memo? Can I write this like an obituary as an exercise to try to get my head out of writing just the way that I always write? So I'm always messing around, and that's my blog, is messing around with different writing forms and to experiment, and without any consequences other than trolls. But
I've got a question, and it's one of my favorites to ask. Has there been a really memorable failure for you that you've learned from? And has there been a really memorable triumph about which you justifiably feel incredibly smug?
I've had so many failures. I started a newspaper with a partner before I started Lost Art Press, before I worked in woodworking. And I just had my butt handed to me. I mean, I knew nothing about finances. I knew how to write. But it was a complete failure on so many levels. It ruined so many people's lives, including mine. It was terrible. I ended up beating up a paper folding machine with a table leg. There are a lot of bad stories that go with it. But, you know, I got up after that and I started another business. And this time I knew what I had done wrong. I thought I knew what I had done wrong. So far, 18 years in, it's doing great. So I'm glad that I failed.
You keep the loose table legs away from the paper folding machines.
Yeah,
there are no table legs in our whole factory here. None. I won't allow them. The triumph that I feel smug about, I would say, is sometimes I can poop out a book and people think it's not going to be a good book. And then it runs away. Like sometimes you spend 2 or 3 years making a book and then you write it. Like my most recent book, it's not going to sell. But I've worked 2 or 3 years on it and it's going to just be fine, whatever. But, you know, I wrote a book a few years ago called Sharpen This, which is about sharpening, which is a dumb topic, but it's an important topic. And I wrote this book in 2 weeks and we've sold like 10,000, 12,000 copies in the last couple of years, which is a lot for a little press. Mm-hmm. So, I feel pretty smug about, you know, doing 2 weeks of work and having something that has just broken a lot of sales records. Mm-hmm. But that's lucky. You don't get to poop out a book you have to eat a lot to poop out a book.
That's for sure. And, you know, I'm familiar with the thing that you have no reason to think is going to take off suddenly blows up. And it's always those little passion projects that just sort of catch you by surprise. And it's always such a delight when that happens. Publishing is an always evolving landscape. And I'm curious to hear from you as an independent publisher, you know, running a small press, doing the kind of work that you do. How have you seen that change over the last few years? And do you have any thoughts about where we're headed in the few years to come? Like advice for writers as they're thinking about getting into this space for new writers, even people who are more established, how to navigate and survive this ever changing landscape.
Yeah. Well, don't be afraid to self-publish. I would say that that's really becoming a good way to make a good living, is that if you can reach an audience through social media and through a blog or Substack or whatnot, you can sell a book and you can make a really good living. And there's no stink on publishing it yourself. Sorry, I know you work for a corporate publisher, but
I'm very clear-eyed about the business I work in.
Yeah, I mean, you don't have to have that big organization behind you if you are not trying to sell a million copies. You know, if you just want to like get your ideas out, there's a lot of scams out there that will try to take your money, but there are a lot of other, you know, good organizations that can help you work through that and get your novel self-published. But I would say try to do everything yourself as much as possible. I mean, we do our own distribution. We don't go through Ingram. We don't go through any of the traditional distribution channels. We don't sell on Amazon. The only people that we sell through are people I've had a meal with who sell woodworking tools. You know, like the closer that you can keep it to the chest and the more real, the less you'll make a lot more money, but you won't get a lot of glory, I guess. Mm-hmm. And I'm much more interested in making good things that a few people enjoy. And I don't care that I'm not a household name among, you know, every housewife in Schenectady, New York. So.
I think that's a good way to approach this business. I think that's a good way to approach a writing career. So I just want to say thank you so much for your time and for joining us here. If people want to find your work, where should they look online?
You just go to lostartpress.com, or some people say Lostart Press. All our stuff is there. Links to our blogs and our Substack and our whole world.
Fantastic. And before we let you go, I believe you have some homework for us.
I do have some homework. I think that a lot of writers, and I do this with some of our people, is I assign them a little piece of homework, which is like, go to wikihow.com or one of the other how-to things and pick out, you know, one of the weird how-to things and use it as either a writing prompt or a way to explore one of your characters. Like if you go on WikiHow's, I went on the WikiHow page today and there was, you know, how to use a belt as handcuffs. And and I'm like, come on, that is a writing prompt right there. I mean, you can, you should, or, you know, have a character encounter that, you know, on
That's
one
a great
side
dialogue
of
dialogue moment. I don't have zip ties, but you're wearing a belt.
Right. But like you could see being on either side of that equation that it would be really interesting. Or how there was a WikiHow on how to make a prison lighter from a battery. You know, this stuff writes itself. So if you just go to this WikiHow, you could like I did one once for myself where I was a white supremacist making wood bleach, you know, to turn wood whiter. And going through the mental, you know, the mental things of why would a white supremacist do this? You know, you know, he doesn't like walnut. It's too dark. But yeah, use WikiHow is an enormous source. And it also like it's how to do stuff. And and that's you've got a structure there to work from that you can just pile some meat on, some narrative meat.
Excellent.
So
I really
summarizing your homework, go to WikiHow, learn a new thing. And then work it into a story.
Yeah,
exactly.
I love it.
Thank you again for joining us. It's been a real pleasure having you here.
Thanks, guys.
This has been Writing Excuses. You're out of excuses. Now go learn to do a thing and then write about it. This episode was recorded by Marshall Carr Jr., mastered by Alex Jackson, and produced by Emma Reynolds. Your hosts were Dongwon Song and Howard Taylor, with special guest Christopher Schwartz.
You want the best for your child. K-12 can help them gain the skills they need to reach their full potential while giving you the support you need to get them there. K-12-powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Their state-certified teachers make online learning interactive and engaging, allowing your child to learn at their pace from the safety of home. Join the more than 3 million families who have chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast today to learn more. That's k12.com/podcast.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies both on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.